Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 6, Episode 105. I'm Dave Bryan from SteelersDepot.com. This is our special pre-draft episode of the Terrible Podcast, and for that, sitting in for David Todd on this Wednesday will be Alex Cazora. Alex, happy Wednesday. Happy eve of the draft.
Yeah, I can't believe it, Dave. All this work that we've all, you know, put through, it's finally here. And so I'm like a little kid on Christmas. I'm going to be up at like 6 a.m. and just hopping around, and man, I can't wait.
Yeah, and you know, we're right at a little bit over 24 hours from the start of this thing, Thursday night in Chicago. You know, I know you and I have finished up our final mock drafts. We also, in case anybody listening to this hasn't seen it yet, I've got the annual Steelers Depot Steelers mock draft contest form already up. The one for the podcast that we'd like to do will go up sometime today. So make sure you're on the lookout for that. Look, you know, it's just a little way for us to say thank you for everybody who have listened to the podcast and visited the site during the off season as well too. It's been a tremendous off season for us. Shout out first of all to you know, all of our content producers at Steelers Depot, and that of course includes Alex as well too, Luke and Josh and Matthew Marksey. We've had a few others along the way as well too. What a tremendous job, Alex, you and the guys have done. How many total prospect player profiles have we been able to do?
I think by the time the draft kicks off tomorrow, we'll be at like 152, and our goal was 150, and last year we did 108, so we've blown by that, and so I'm really proud of the hard work everyone's put in.
Absolutely, and I think by the time this thing's done, well over 1,000 animated GIFs to go along with it, which is when you, kind of mesmerizing when you think about it. And kind of my favorite part of, you know, unfortunately due to moving restrictions and content and having to create other content and site management, everything that goes along with it, I wasn't able to write as many profiles as I would have liked to. Now, I've watched tape on probably 200 players in total, and the good thing about it is nearly every guy that you guys do, you know, I'm doing the GIFs for, so I'm forced to watch, you know, the cut ups and all as well too. But even still, you know, you can't learn everything about every player in such a short amount of time. I probably have extended knowledge, what I would call extended knowledge, on maybe, I don't know, 80 to 100, you know, where I'm real, real comfortable of knowing who that player is. And I think you would agree with that. And I think it also, you know, having done that, and people forget, you and I are full-time at this.
Right.
You know, so I think that kind of, you know, lets people know that these draft evaluators out there, there's only so many hours in the day, and there's only so much film that you can write, you know, watch during a day. That, you know, that's why you have to take a little bit from this guy and a little bit from this guy, what you see, and kind of formulate your own opinions in addition to what you see.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, of course, you know, we are not the say-all, end-all. You know, we have our own personal rankings. You know, I put up my cornerback rankings today, and they're going to look very different than your cornerback rankings or Mel Kiper or Mike Mayock or what have you. So, you know, it's always about making your own thoughts based on the information. And just like Mike Tomlin says, Dave, you know, trust the tape. Go watch the tape for yourself. Form your own opinion. Even if it doesn't match up with mine or yours or whoever, that's okay. You want it to be pure and unique to you.
The thing that I hate seeing, unfortunately, you see this around the web, and some people you kind of thought wouldn't do it. You know, people use the bias in there, and they sometimes use it as a bias just because someone else has said something else about it. They just want to be contrarian, you know, and that's the absolutely worst thing that I can't stand is when you see, look, I don't mind someone being inconsistent on somebody, but have a great, great reason and stick to that along the process. To be contrarian, just to be contrarian, it's just it's absolutely horrible. And it's hard not to go into these players, you know, with some sort of bias, because obviously you've read something, you've seen the player's measurables, you've seen his college stats. There's no such thing as just turning on the tape and somebody saying, I want you to watch number 14 here, and that's all you're going to do here, because you obviously don't go through this thing with blinders on, and you know that's what makes it tough. Being the information's now. Can you imagine doing this back in the old days, and I don't know. Would you say in the old days before the internet, if you were to compare people's scouting reports, would you think there'd be more unison, or way off the charts different?
Oh, that's a really good question. I think it's really hard to say. I think one thing, there would be less bias because you wouldn't hear as much about these guys. So I think, I don't know if they'd be more unison or contrasting, but I think that they'd be more unique and more pure, I guess. I don't want to sound like a draft purist, if there is such a thing. But I think with all the conversations that you get to have today, there are some great people out there to talk to and to learn from and to have great discussions with. But, of course, that does create another level of bias. So, you kind of get more of other people's opinions into your own scouting report. I don't know. That's a really good question, Dave, if they would be more unison or not. I can't say for sure.
Yeah, and you got to know, back in the day, the Street and Smiths and all these magazines we used to buy before the draft. I don't know, maybe that's a little bit before your time.
Yeah.
I can remember growing up, the draft magazines would come out in like, oh geez, I can't remember specifics when it did, but seemed like almost immediately after the college football season was over, and it really, looking back now, it makes you wonder, how did all those people get all that tape to watch, and B, any tape that they did get, it had to be TV footage, because you weren't going to get that out of schools with the All 22. So it makes you kind of wonder, have I been fooled all along, during this process? But it certainly is eye-opening. We get more and more tape every year. I theorize that it probably won't be long before there is some sort of All 22 service. In fact, I think the NCAA is missing the boat somehow in here to make some money by not opening that kind of stuff up for a service. But enough about that. Let's actually get to what may or may not happen this week. Before we do, the Steelers may have had another cornerback that we're unsure whether or not he was actually brought in for a visit, or if they just had a kind of a one-on-one or a workout with him. Why don't you tell us a little bit about who that player was?
Yeah, that man is Kalen Reed from Southern Mississippi. And right, there was a tweet sent out by a local, Hattiesburg reporter. He says it was a visit. I mean, that could be a pre-draft workout where they're going to him. It doesn't sound like it's a facility workout. Most of those have been, although we have 30 already tracked, and most of those have been announced by the team, Dave. But Kalen Reed is a guy that, again, in reality, players don't rise and fall the way that we kind of view them. But in the media circle, there are always guys that were late to catch up on, and Reed was kind of one of the last guys to come in from basically an unknown in almost every circle, or at least not talked about, to a guy that could be a day two pick. He's 5'11", 192 pounds. The big number with him, he jumped 41.5 inches at his pro day. So you have a guy with some decent size and some, excellent elite hops. He's a 3-year starter, productive last year, 4 interceptions, forced 2 fumbles, broke up a ton of passes down there. He's kind of all over the map, but Dave, as I kind of quickly wrote about in the article, which as of this recording just went up on Steelers Depot, the day two cornerback class really isn't that great to me. There aren't a ton of names that I really love, and so I think if, you want to look at a guy in the third round, if you haven't gotten a cornerback by then, I think Kalen Reed could be a great option for Pittsburgh.
Do you see him I kind of view him more as a third or fourth round guy, and that, you know, it's dangerous to kind of throw that out there because you don't know what teams. If I were going to grade him in relation to the other cornerbacks, that's kind of where I have him. You know, fourth maybe at worst. What was this? Was this one of the players that kind of matched up in the article that you did with what the Steelers looked for in a cornerback, or was he out? Did he miss any of those areas?
Well, it was tough. He wasn't even really considered because I looked at just combine guys, and Reed was not invited to the combine. But if you look at his vertical and you see his 40 time out there, it's always tough to trust a pro day 40 time. But just kind of some base measurables that we can kind of go off of. He hit the vertical. He hit the broad. It looks like his 40 time is going to be good enough. You know, the Steelers, I think the threshold was like 4.55, and I think Reed reportedly ran a 4.49. So you figure even with some margin of error, he's still coming under there. So, yeah, I mean, I think generally he kind of checked all the boxes. He's a springy corner with some size and some speed, and that's good enough for Pittsburgh.
Not as good as a tackler as you would like.
Yeah, tape has been limited for me. I mean, I really don't have a great evaluation of him. He might be a little bit leaner looking. But I think, again, there just aren't a lot of day two corners that I like. I don't know if you have any. I mean, of course, you know me and Jonathan Jones, but, you know, we can't hang our hat on just one guy. He might not be there. So, I think if you're looking at pick 89, if you haven't gotten a corner yet, Kalen Reed, if he's on the board, is going to be an option.
He only allowed 34 completions on 84 targets last year, played almost 80% of the snaps, 2 touchdowns allowed, high number of passes. His passes defense ranked him like, I don't know, third or fourth in a nation or something like that. I can't remember exactly. And it seems like, if memory serves me, he had the most passes defense maybe in 2014.
Yeah, I don't know what his 14 numbers were. I just looked at his 15 stats, and they were something like, you know, they still have pass, breakups and pass deflections in separate stats. I wish they would just combine that and make it a little easier. But it was like 19 breakups and 23 passes defended. So yeah, whatever the number is, like 40 basically total breakups. I'm sure that was close to tops in the NCAA.
And then some people, too, you know, beauty is in the eye of the beholder sometimes where it comes to pass breakups and,
yeah,
you know, defense. You know, it's a very kind of subjective stat. Did miss or was responsible for 10 broken tackles last season. I think that's the thing that kind of stuck out to me. Was the fact is probably not as good as tackler as you would like, you know. So,
but every corner's going to miss. So, I mean, it depends, you know.
Sure.
And just like, you know, breakups, missed tackles could be a subjective stat by a, you know, stingy statistician. So, I mean, who knows for exactly how egregious they were.
I think I read up something on him, too. A fairly decent special teams player, though. So he has that going for him. Look, I mean, if the Steelers wait, you know, to round three, round four, to address his position, he is a guy that really, I don't think a lot of us have talked about for the sheer fact that it just really hasn't been any known link to the Steelers, right?
Right, yeah.
Up until now.
Right, and the buzz, you know, Southern Miss kid that didn't get to the combine, so you're not in a position to get a lot of buzz. But whenever you have great pro day workouts, it gets you noticed. And when you hit 41.5 inches in the vert, that's going to get you noticed.
Was he a Senior Bowl guy or no?
No, he wasn't. I don't think he was part of the circuit for anything, Shrine Game. I mean, I could be wrong on Shrine Game, but definitely not Senior Bowl, definitely not Combine. So, you know, if you wonder why some of these guys you don't hear about that much, because they just didn't have those chances for big-time exposure. I mean, Southern Miss, you know, that program's really dipped downhill, and I think they were a little better this year, but last year I'm pretty sure they were terrible. So, you know, it's hard to get noticed in that realm.
He was at the NFLPA Collegiate Bowl, right?
I could be wrong on that. I don't remember. I want to say no, but I don't know the whole roster off the top of my head.
Yeah, I'm going to have to.
I'll pull it up. What is that? The keep talking ref that you always love to tell David.
Yeah, keep talking. It seemed like I remember his name from that game, and I think I even kind of zeroed on some of the tape that I watched on him. It was from that game, but I might be mistaken. You see so much tape on these guys, you think this guy played in that game. But I remember I'm pretty sure he played in that game, but I might be wrong.
Yeah, and just while the page loads, you said you had the really interesting study the other day, if you want to take 2 seconds to kind of expand on it, what the Steelers on average draft 4 guys that come from the Shrine Game and or the Senior Bowl, right?
Yeah. Of these all-star games, and basically just really limiting that to Senior Bowl and East-West Shrine Game, I think on average 4 players. And, you know, it's hit and miss with a first-round draft pick, obviously, because if that's a underclassman, he's obviously not going to play, you know, in those games. But a high probability that maybe, you know, second or third-round draft pick will have played in one of those 2 games. And I think in total, yeah, you're right. I think the average is something like 4 a year coming out of those games. So it was fun, and I think you saw in that post, I go back and match up the guys that they brought in for a visit, because you really got to think, if a guy came in for a visit and played in the Senior Bowl or the Shrine Game, there's a good chance he might end up on the Steelers.
Exactly, and you have a good memory, Dave. Reed was at the NFLPA game, so that was his one invite.
I thought so, and it seemed like the other corner, I think, that was matched up with him was Jimmy Pruitt, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. I remember kind of watching as well, too. But that's what you get for being kind of having a Raymond-type mind. But I can't remember what socks I wore yesterday or whether or not I took my multivitamin sometimes.
At least you're taking vitamins. That's good. Good on
you. At my age and the amount of sleep that I'm able to get, you better be able to do that. I don't hate the kid at all, and I don't think you do either. He everything on tape and measurables just screams that he could be potentially a Steeler.
Yeah, it's just a question of where he goes, and he's so all over the map. I mean, you know, I think he's going to go day 2. He could go, you know, later in round 2 or sometime in round 3. You know, it wouldn't shock me to see him slip to the 4th, like you said. It just, whenever these guys get late in the process, they're kind of quote unquote draft stocks kind of fuzzy. So I think he goes on somewhere in day 2, but it's hard to say for sure.
Interesting. Look, they're going to – here's one prediction we'll start off with. The Steelers will go defense in round 1.
Unless a Corey Coleman or Josh Doctson fly, and I've been saying this for a while, and Kevin Colbert kind of made a little hint at it at least, right, Dave?
Yeah, he, in a talk on I think it was DVE Tuesday morning in an interview, he addressed the possibility. Look, he said it's very, very unlikely for a cornerback and running back for obvious reasons. He said when you get to running back, we have one great receiver, but as you know, you need more than that. He's not going to rule that out, but he said it would have to be a special player. Sure, if a guy like that dropped, it would be very tempting, because you'd have to think that a couple of those guys would be, you know, Doctson or Coleman going to be up there on top of their board. But I just think the odds of those two guys slipping to the Steelers, let alone outside the top 20, is very, very slim.
Yeah. I mean, I do too, but I mean, I just think that, you know, it could happen, and if it does, the value could be so immense that it's hard to pass up on.
Yeah, and of the two, it'd have to be, one would think at Coleman, the, you know, more attractive.
Yeah, I mean, they were at Baylor's Pro Day. I don't think they were even at TCU. I think Coleman's more explosive. I think he actually is more. I mean, I'll say that outright. He is more explosive. Doctson can win the 50-50 balls because he's bigger. He's a better, you know, he times jumps really well. But Coleman would be the first one. Doctson would kind of be the second one.
And so basically what we're saying is Coleman or bust, right?
I think there's still a chance for Doctson, because I think there's – I mean, you know, he fit our criteria almost to a T, and Coleman, I think, was right there with him. So, but yeah, Coleman would be, I think, the more valued pick of the two.
How surprised – we're going to be getting to our breakdowns of our mock drafts in a minute here. I think you have to go back to, what was it, 2000 – what did I write the other day? 2003 or 2004, the last time the Steelers went all defense with their first 3 picks in the draft. And even in that draft, they didn't – their 3rd pick in that draft was a 4th-round pick, and that was Ike Taylor. Mm. What is the likelihood that their first 3 picks in this draft are all defense?
It's a great question, Dave. You know, it's difficult to say. I if I had to put an arbitrary percentage on the top 3, I would probably say you know, I don't want to wimp out like I think David Todd did on Monday's podcast. I'll say like 60%, I think, better than you know, average chance of them going all defense. You know, I think in round three, if you get a possibility of someone on offense, a tackle or a receiver that's there that's attractive to them, it's kind of the thing that's holding me back from putting that number higher. I think in the first four rounds, I think it's hard to see them go defense through the whole first four rounds. So I think I'd put those odds at like 33% chance. You know, so it's so hard to tell without seeing how the board's gonna lay out. But to see them, you know, go that, I mean, as much as defense is a need, you do want to have variety. You do want to give help in different areas and different sides of the football.
Are you with me? You think there's a good chance? Well, I mean, I think it's obvious if they do go offense in the first three with a pick in the first three rounds, it's going to be a wide receiver, right?
Yeah, I think if it is going to be a position, it's either going to be either a really strong, you know, offensive lineman, and it could be a tackle, or it could also be an interior guy, just because some of the interest they've shown in the offseason. But I think odds are it'll be a receiver.
And chances are probably around 75 to 80%. You would think that they'd take a wide receiver in the first four rounds.
I'd put a receiver in my mock, you know, and I think you did too. We both have a receiver going in the first four rounds. So yeah, I think the odds are pretty high. So sure, 75% chance of receiver in the first four. I mean, that sounds okay to me.
Yeah, I'm almost convinced. I mean, I wouldn't bet the house on it, but boy, I think a wide receiver in the first three rounds is going to happen. I think, and I think it should in the first four rounds, mm-hmm. if the value presents itself, and of course it's a player that they like, because as I've stated several times, look, you got Martavis Bryant. You don't know what you're going to get there. Mm-hmm. Nobody does moving forward. He might very well play his last game in the NFL. Marcus Wheaton, I just don't see how people say, well, how can you guarantee he won't be back? I'm not going to guarantee that he won't be back in 2017, but you know what they pay these wide receivers in the free agent market, and being as how he figures to be one of the better ones next offseason, you have to think he's gone as well too. Darius Hayward Bay, God bless him. I love what he is and what he does, but he is what he is, and that's all that he is. I mean, he's got to maybe catch you 30, 40 balls at most. Sammy Coates, I like Sammy Coates' upside, but let's face it, we just don't know who he is yet at the NFL level, and he's got a lot to prove this year. And because of that, I think this team needs to continue the plan of drafting a wide receiver, and if you're going to want a good one in this weaker wide receiver class, in my opinion, you're going to have to get one in the first four rounds.
Especially since you don't have that fifth. So if you don't take one in the top four, then you're waiting to the sixth, and then you're really getting somebody that's probably going to have a lot of issues, and you don't know if you're ever going to get a contribution from them. So, yeah, I think there's a really good chance you're going to take a receiver in the top four, and like I said, we both have a receiver going in our mock drafts.
All right, let's talk a little bit about our mock drafts, and I don't want it just look, mock drafts are what they are. They're educated guesses at best, and the likelihood of us, I think, hitting two of these guys is really, really kind of just a wish. And because when you see it year in, year out, it's such a losing proposition. But with that said, you know, I think both of us kind of put in, you know, three other guys that we would consider, and I think combined, you know, if you figure that I have 28 players, I don't know how many total you kind of suggested in yours. If you add them together, you would think that we'd be able to get about five or six of the Steelers draft picks out of that. So we're going to kind of fly through this pretty quickly with our mock drafts and who we each considered in the first round and go from there. And here's the thing, and I'll start with mine. Well, you know, both of ours, it's no secret, both of us have Carl Joseph going to the Steelers in the first round. People ask me, Dave, why'd you switch from Andrew Billings? I think I laid it out there pretty well. I just don't think Andrew Billings is going to be on the board. I think a team like the Redskins, the Vikings, or the Bengals, one of those three teams, there's a high chance, in my opinion, that he goes there. William Jackson III, I think he's going to be off the board as well, too. So that really kind of left me down to a guy like Noah Spence and Carl Joseph. And I have Carl Joseph ranked higher than Noah Spence. I would not break any glass or punch any walls. If Noah Spence was a guy, what an intriguing guy that guy would be, being able to provide pressure coming off the edge. I've talked about Carl Joseph several times, a smart player. I'm not worried. I'm assuming that Nat knee's fine, and that's all I can do at this point. I'm assuming at worst he will miss the first six games of the season on the PUP list, and that's at the very worst. Alex, you take it from there.
Yeah, it's tough to find a guy because all the players that we've talked about throughout this process, a Spence, a Billings, a Jackson, you know, they're all guys that you think if you know are going to have to fall and kind of be guys that go lower than expected to get to Pittsburgh. There's not really a guy that's been sitting there the whole time or in that 25 range. So I think, you know, Spence, I think there's a lot of interest in Spence, and I think if he falls, which would take a lot, that he's good chance that he's going to be the guy. But I think Joseph makes the most amount of sense in terms of who will be there. And now even with Joseph, there's rumors that he could go above 25. But, you know, we've laid out the reasons before, and we won't have to rehash them all. But knowing the value in the safety position and knowing that, you know, you can get a long-term investment in Carl Joseph, and even if year one contribution isn't heavy, you have Robert Golden to kind of bridge that. And you know, knowing the way that Joseph plays and the starting experience and all the hats that he wore, he was so versatile at West Virginia. You know, it's easy to see why Carl Joseph is the guy. But who else, you know, any other name that you considered? I know you mentioned a couple, but guys that might be there at 25?
And look, I've said it all along. Just I'm not a big Eli Apple fan. Mm-hmm. I'm not a Mackenzie Alexander fan. I think Mackenzie Alexander is more of a top of the second round guy, if you ask me. And I guess that's kind of broad when you say, well, that's only seven picks away from, you know, where the Steelers pick. I would worry about either one of those underclassmen kids. I think they need a lot of development still. Not saying that they won't potentially be great in the NFL. I want a cornerback that's a little bit more polished. William Jackson III, in my opinion, is that guy to me. Those are the really Alex, Andrew Billings, Joseph, William Jackson III, and Noah Spence are the only four guys I could really come up with outside of a player that might drop, like a Shaq Lawson or somebody just unexpected. I'm open to hearing more names.
I mean, the only other one that still really sticks with me where I try to lay down at night to go to bed and I'm still thinking about this name, and I know a lot of people don't agree with me, but I still think Keanu Neal could be in play because, you know, he's a bigger guy than Joseph. He's well-built. He's healthy. You know, there's not any concerns about, you know, of course, a torn ACL. And though I think Joseph is the superior prospect, because I think the big thing is a little bit better in coverage and a lot more consistent. But I think when Neal is on his game and playing to the level that he can, he's not that far away from Carl Joseph. And the thing people have to understand is, yes, Neal has made a lot of mistakes. Some people don't like his instincts. They don't think he reads and reacts that well. But this guy's only a two-year starter. He's a junior coming out, if I'm not mistaken. Carl Joseph has started 42 games. I think Neal sits at probably like 25 or something like that. So from an experience level, of course Neal is going to make a lot more mistakes. He put on his 2014 tape, his first year starting. Yeah, he made a ton of mistakes, but that's what first-year starters in college football do. So I think you have to understand that, and if you believe that he's an intelligent guy that can learn and you can work with him, then, you know, he makes him that much more attractive because you understand that he went through some growing pains that I'm sure Carl Joseph went through in 2013 and early on in his career. So, you know, I know that's unconventional. I floated the idea out there last night on Twitter, got a lot of blowback for that, but I think that Neal, it would not shock me if they took Neal over Joseph or if Joseph wasn't even there.
And it's going to – I mean, are we even having this conversation, though, if there's nothing wrong with Joseph's knee?
If Joseph's knee was good, he might not be there at 25. We might have to talk about Keanu Neal.
Right. So don't we have to assume that this is still going to be this, you know, based on we're outsiders and we're only doctors on Twitter, that knee is going to be fine. He's going to be the same player. We have no choice but to assume that, right?
Yeah. I mean, there's no reason to assume not. But you understand, you know, anytime you take on an injury risk, you know, you'd rather have the healthy guy over the injured guy in a vacuum.
Right, but as Kevin Colbert pointed out the other day, you have to know, you have to be in tune, you know, to what the calculated risk
right.
is, and by all accounts, with Joseph, he's going to be fine. And yes, he might start the season off on the PUP list, but you know, you got a lot of career left from that.
Right. No, I totally understand. But, you know, there's always you just never know. And I know that's very easy to say, but there's a mental side of it. How does a player handle? Does he trust that knee again? I mean, there's a lot of, you know, weird things going on there that you really can't calculate. I think, again, I like Joseph Moore. He's still my guy. Obviously, he's my pick. But I think there's a lot of attractive things about Neal, the way he plays, the way he hits, the way he's built. I think his coverage got better in 2015. I think there were less mistakes than you saw in 2014. And as a young guy that doesn't have a great body of work, if you feel like he's a teachable guy that can really be coached up, it wouldn't shock me.
Where do you come in on William Jackson III versus Apple and Alexander? You have to have him rated higher, right?
Yeah, I mean, I posted my cornerback rankings today. Jackson came in number two, even ahead of Vernon Hargraves by a tick. I had Alexander 4. I think I had Eli Apple 6 in my rankings of the guys, the 21 players that I've seen. I take Jackson over the field, basically.
And we both think that Jackson's going to be off the board. We both kind of think Billings is going to be off the board, right?
Yeah, I think Billings has a better chance than Jackson. It's still possible that either drop, especially, you know, there were the reports that Hargraves might have failed a drug test, but those reports were false. So there's not a character concern, you know, there with Vernon Hargraves. But I think you're assuming right now, if we were to make a mock draft, which is what the Steelers are probably doing right now, kind of the last thing that you do is you create your own mock draft in your war room just to give some scenarios of how things might play out. I think you assume that Jackson and Billings are off the board. And in the 7-round mock that I did, Dave, I had both Jackson and Billings off the board by 25.
Which way are you going if Billings, Jackson, and Joseph are all still on the board?
Well, I know it's very easy to say, but I think trading back becomes a very attractive thing to do. You know, there's a lot of connection with Denver where you could probably pick up a 3rd-round pick and move back, 6 spots and still find someone there. But if we assume that you can't trade back, then the other names I have there is Vernon Butler, who we mocked in our Inside the Pylon mock, and we've talked about that before. I go back to Keanu Neal. And Reggie Ragland. So those are kind of the 3 other guys I've looked at.
Who are you taking, though?
I'll wimp out for a second here. I think that they would take Neal in that scenario. I would probably take Vernon Butler, though.
All right. Well, I mean, we expect Butler to be off the board, though. But back to the original scenario: Billings, Jackson, or Joseph. Those are the 3 that you have to choose from.
Oh, okay. I thought you said those were off the board. Did I hear you wrong?
No, you have to – I'm just giving you a scenario. Okay. What if Billings, Jackson, and Joseph are there, and you have to pick one of those 3?
I want to take Billings because there aren't many nose tackles that have that skill set. There's a lot of corners that you can still get. There's a ton of safeties that you can get in day 2. There's not a lot of nose tackles that do what Billings does.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you as well. And I think, I mean, if I would think that Billings would be on the board, I would have him over Joseph just slightly, though, because I like Joseph. Yeah. And here's the thing is, once again, if he wasn't injured, you know, he's a top 20 guy,
mm-hmm.
you know. So the only question is that knee. That's a great conversation on the Steelers' first round pick. True or false, the Steelers' first round pick will come out of either Clemson, Miami, Houston, Florida, Florida State, West Virginia, Baylor, or Ohio State?
I guess I'll say true. That's a pretty wide net. I'm comfortable with that.
Yeah, I am too. That's 8 schools, 8 of the 9 schools that Tomlin and Kevin Colbert attended the pro days at. So if you don't have one of those kids in your mind, I mean, I guess obviously you could throw in Eastern Kentucky in there, mm-hmm. but I kind of, you know, with Noah Spence, I kind of still view him as an Ohio State kid, right?
Yeah.
It'd be interesting if it came down to that. But there's a good bet that the Steelers' number 1 draft pick is coming out of one of those 8 Power 5 conference schools for sure. Round 2, and I think this is mostly because both of us didn't get our nose tackle in round 1. We both have Javon Hargrave, which I'm not as high on Hargrave as people, other people are. And once again, you're picking late in the second round there to say, well, I kind of view him maybe more as a third round guy, and you're only six or seven picks away from the third round. But still, I'm not as high as others, but I also understand that he's probably not going to be a guy that if he were to slip to the third round, it's going to fall very far past that point. FCS guy, and your study that you wrote up, several weeks ago was excellent. The Steelers normally shy away from FCS guys, so if they were to take an FCS guy, that kid better stick out head and shoulders above everybody else. And boy, when you turn on the film with Javon Hargrave, he did. You go back to the last two seasons, 104 total tackles, 46 tackles for loss, and 29 and a half sacks. Kind of that bubble butt build. I know some people's asking, 309, that'd get a little iffy of weight. He can put on either good or bad weight, if you ask me. A little bit shorter arms, a little bit smaller hands. Runs after the football well, a leader there at South Carolina State, a guy that can, I think, will have some trouble adjusting to double teams in the NFL because he had problems with it in college, a guy that's going to have to learn to use those powerful legs and base of his better along with his hands and arms, not as polished by Andrew Billings, obviously, in my opinion, but a guy that you could certainly see not only playing nose tackle on the Steelers 3-4, mostly is maybe kind of a one technique, a more one gap penetrating nose tackle, but a guy that could also give you snaps eventually at some point as a nickel pass rusher. Wow, what did I miss?
I think you said it all, so I'll make my point kind of short and sweet here. Yeah, I think some of the double teams, I think some of that's technique and pad level, which, I can already hear John Mitchell in my head right now at the podium if they draft him all kind of, frantic and frenetic the way that he kind of speaks. But as much as we talk about the small school element and how important that is, when you have a guy like Hargraves who's been on the big stage, he was at the Shrine Game, at the Senior Bowl, at the Combine, did well everywhere there. Steelers were at his pro day. The Steelers bring him in for a pre-draft visit. I mean, there's a point where you say all that exposure and interest in a guy kind of makes the small school thing moot. So, Hargrave, some people think he's a third rounder, but I think which is how few nose tackles there are and the guys that can play the nose and play in sub-baggage football, you got to get one, and if you wait, you're going to miss out.
For starters, the most concerning film, in my opinion, I'm not sure if you saw it, 2014 against Clemson.
I did not see the Clemson tape. I watched 15, and I watched the game way back in 2013. So I did not see. But you thought he got blown out against double teams? Is that?
No, I just being a small school kid trying to make a name for himself against bigger name competition. I just was left myself wanting a little bit more. Of course, you can't evaluate a game just off stats, but statistically did not have a good game in that against Clemson in 2014 as well. So really only the black mark I kind of have on my scouting report of him, and I dug around trying to find a lot of different tape on him as well. Other guys we consider, Alex, I came very close to trying to put Sterling Shepard. Sterling Shepard looks, smells, feels like a Steeler wide receiver. Production's there. Super kid. I don't know if you saw the video, the package that ESPN put together on him, on his father and all like that. Boy, the kid was at Oklahoma like for 8 years, it seemed like, on top of it. If I knew for a fact that Sterling Shepard would be on the board in the second round, it would be hard for me to pass him up. But I considered him. Shalik Calhoun out of Michigan State, I know he's a guy that you're probably higher on than I am. And then Camilla Correa, the edge rusher out of Boise State, that I'm kind of meh on. But when it comes to trying to find a guy in the second round, especially if you took a safety in the first, it's kind of hard to put a name there for the Steelers, right?
Yeah, the adventure begins already because, again, the day two corners, there aren't a ton of them. I mean, I could see an Artie Burns, but a lot of people have Burns going 25, so maybe they're higher on him and he's going to go higher than what I think. Sean Davis, I think is an interesting guy that is a really good athlete. My one, and I almost did this just to be really out there because I know there's not really any interest in him reported, but Bronson Cufasi is such an interesting guy that can wear a lot of hats. He's kind of similar to Carl Nassib, though a little bit more refined and polished. You know, that's a guy that I could just see them taking that, not a flyer, but take that out of the box pick that you can use in sub package, you can use in base, you can use as an outside linebacker in some sub package football. I think he'd be a real fun guy to play around with. You know, I know he's probably a little bit older as a BYU kid, but that would, you know, that's I almost went there just to be different, but I have that feeling that they could like him.
Who else did you have there, possibility?
Like the guys I mentioned, Artie Burns and Sean Davis. It's a tough pick to try to figure out.
Sean Davis, so more of a safety, though, right?
Yeah, I mean, he played some corner. He's kind of done both. I think he has the feet and the athleticism to play corner, but I think most view him as a safety.
Yeah, people saying, well, that you know, look, he NFL team is going to probably use him more as a safety than anything. He's a fun kid to watch on tape. There's no doubt about it. Your overall thoughts on Calhoun?
You know, I feel about Calhoun. I think he can make the transition. He's a 42-game starter, a two-time captain. Productivity was through the roof. He dominated Iowa in the title game. If he's there, I'm running to the podium.
All right, third round. How surprised were you when you saw my pick?
I really like it, Dave. I wish I could steal it, but I'm not going to do that to you. I actually put on some Braxton Miller tape last night. I watched three games. He's going to be my final report right before the draft. And, I mean, we talked about Miller a couple weeks ago on the podcast, and you know he's got high marks as a character. I mean, this is a guy that, for how new he is to the position, he's pretty refined. I mean, there's still some areas he's definitely got to work on, but I think he's a playmaker. He wins in space, not necessarily with long speed, but in agility. He's a big guy. He's physical. He gives a lot of effort as a blocker. He's got good hands. He tracks the football well. You know, I have a really good feeling you're going to be right about this one, Dave.
Is there a chance he's there? I mean, you would admit there's a chance he's there in the third, right?
Sure, absolutely. I think he was off the board on my 7-round mock, but yeah, I mean, it's not surprising to see him drop to 89. That's not a shock by any means.
Now, you wouldn't take him in the second round, though, right?
No, we had this discussion before. I think just the second round's too high because he is still a pretty raw guy and a little bit older as well.
And you could see teams taking Tyler Boyd before him, right?
Yeah, I could. You know, I'm not crazy about Boyd. I don't think he's a great athlete. I think he's kind of limited. But it wouldn't surprise me.
And the thing I think that people did I explain my decision behind the pick? Good.
Yes, you did, Dave. I thought it was solid reasoning. I thought the return value was a great point that you made. You kind of made the Randall L comparison, which I thought was kind of an interesting and a very apt comparison. And, you know, of course, Kevin Colbert drafted Randall L, so you still have, you know, the same, you know, regime. So, yeah, I think that your reasoning was very sound.
And I think whatever team, correct me if I'm wrong, any team that drafts Braxton Miller is more looking at him probably as a limited contributor during his rookie season, with more of an eye on polishing him up by 2017. I think it would be foolish whatever team drafts him if they don't seriously consider him both a kickoff and punt returner. I know he did some of that at the Senior Bowl, and I think several people say he really looks like he could be a natural at that with his open field ability and ability to catch the football. So I know I wrote this at the end of the article or end of my pick here, Alex. I said the lazy narrative is Miller is a football player, and as the old saying goes, you can never have too many of those. But I think that's exactly where I am on him. This is a guy that caught less than 30 passes during his 1 year, right, as a wide receiver. So there's going to be a lot of question marks on him that he wasn't able to answer during the pre-draft process. So interesting pick, I think, on mine. I'll be tickled pink if that's the one that I hit on this. I understand the people throwing the tomatoes at me, saying, oh, you don't need a wide receiver in the first three or four rounds. I get it. Other guys I considered here, Cyrus Jones out of Alabama. Man, I got a man crush on Jordan Jenkins throughout this whole thing. It's going to be interesting to find out where he ends up and how his NFL path goes as well from there. I think you have to take a hard look at Nick Vinette in this round as well, too, tight end out of Ohio State. And look, Alex, what is a Steelers draft without an Ohio State player?
It's not a draft at all. I mean, it doesn't exist. What is it, five of the last six or six of the last seven? But just to round up Braxton Miller, I think the big thing with him is efficiency. got to become a more efficient player at the top of his route. But, you know, you have Richard Mann, you have a veteran guy that can work with that. And you're right, Dave. Get him involved in special teams in year one. Make him an impact guy in your return game. You know, rep him up in practices, you know, as a receiver. And then by year two for Pittsburgh, that could be, you know, with Marcus Wheaton gone and Martavis Bryant gone, who knows what's going to happen there. That seems like a perfect – I mean, is there a better fit for Braxton Miller than Pittsburgh?
I'm sure there might be, yeah. But
not an option.
There's not – Not many, right? I mean, it stinks Steelers. If you ask me, who do you have in a third, and who else should we consider in the
third?
Well,
you know, my third round pick by now. We talk about man crushes. We talk about Jonathan Jones, and you know, for all the interest that they've shown in him, that's a guy that you root for. That I'm very high on, higher than probably 99% of people. I won't talk about him. A whole lot more other guys I thought were interesting. I put my own receiver in there, Leonte Carew, who might be a little bit of Marcus Wheaton. Great hands, a reliable guy, physical guy that's willing to block. Another guy, I went outside linebacker too. I almost put this guy here as well, and I almost dropped Jonathan Jones down. But Charles Tapper from Oklahoma, you know, really intriguing athlete, ran a 4.59 at 272 pounds at the combine. I love his hustle, the heart that he has. To chase the ball downfield. I think, you know, Pittsburgh, of course, is going to love that. So, you know, the edge class is not great, but when you talk about a Jordan Jenkins or a Charles Tapper in round three, if someone's there and they kind of fall a little bit, I think there's a lot of interest in that. And I think in a worst-case scenario, if the Steelers don't get a nose tackle within the first two rounds, I think kind of the last guy that has a lot of talent that kind of fits that nose tackle sub-package role, though he's on a lower level, is Austin Johnson, a Penn State kid. Who's got, can play the run. Want to see a little bit more power from him. He tries to be a little too finesse as a pass rusher. But I think that could be kind of the last guy that I would look at as a nose tackle.
Yeah, that's a good point. And look, I mean, there's a chance that they could ignore the position first couple of rounds,
yeah.
and be looking for some. The kid out of Oregon State, if you have to wait a long, long time, would be worth a look. But, I mean, the upside, obviously. Who's that, Pico?
Oh, Kyle Pecco, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean that's much, much later in my opinion. There's no other defensive tackle that you would kind of that you could see there that would be available.
Oh man, I mean there's some guys that can play the run, a DJ Reader from Clemson and guys like that. But I don't think there's going to be. I think I put a list of basically five guys that I think can be that nose tackle sub package, and they're all going to go within the top three rounds.
Let's see. Let's move on to round four. Of all these kind of young, mid-round, undersized corners that came in for pre-draft visits, I kind of gravitated towards. You went to Jonathan Jones. Mm-hmm. I went Tavon Young. I'm really impressed with his film against Notre Dame and Will Fuller. I think that's really kind of a game that maybe woke some people up to this guy. Vertically challenged, as I like to say. that means he's well under 5'10", 5'9", and 1'8", 183 pounds. Just a hard worker, former team captain at Temple, not afraid of all these wide receivers. Correct me if I mean of all these cornerbacks. I think you would agree these mid to late guys. He's the guy probably most willing to put his face in the fan and tackle. A fairly reliable tackle on top of that. I think he's probably one of the smartest of the group, and I use that loosely. Because I don't know. I just look at football smarts and the way I kind of view him in his interviews and all like that. Self-proclaimed kind of tape junkie, I think, as well, too. Obviously, more of a slot guy at the NFL level, but that's the guy I went with. I did consider your guy Jonathan Jones here, Dean Lowry, who's a spark freak, if you will, a guy that's probably going to get overdrafted because of his measurables, and unique
Ngakoue
out of Maryland. The Steelers showed a little bit of interest at his pro day. So those are my four names there. Add on what you will, and then talk about your fourth round pick, who I know a little bit about.
Yeah, no, I Tavon Young, I put him real high in my cornerback rankings. I think he came in, seventh or eighth overall. in the 21 that I watched, and he's a real quick twitch guy. You're right. You know, you saw the comment. You know, when he came to visit Pittsburgh, he said it was his favorite place to visit. He loved getting to talk about scheme and really, you know, break stuff down. And I'm sure anytime you get any tape junkies like you said, it's attractive. They're guys that are hungry to learn and want to learn and want to get better. He's a tough guy. If you don't know Temple, they only give out single digit numbers to the toughest guys on the roster, and Tavon Young wore number one, so it's one of the toughest guys and one of the smaller guys. So I would love that pick. I'd have no problem with it, and the value lines up great as well. Lowry, the worry there is just the lack of length. He's got the stubby T-Rex arms. I think they're 31 inches or somewhere around there. So I just think the length isn't there to play five tech, though he's a good athlete. I went with Malcolm Mitchell, receiver from Georgia. Again, you know, talking about getting a receiver within the top four rounds. You know, you can consider a Farrell Cooper, consider a Chris Moore, some of the other guys that I threw in. I thought Mitchell had a nice Senior Bowl week. I thought whenever Mitchell's been healthy, he's been productive. And the health is probably the biggest bugaboo with him. But if you put on the tape and you watch him when he's healthy, this is a guy that has good hands, and he did well down there at Georgia. He had a healthy average, and he tested fantastic. I mean, you talk about a guy that, you know, in a weak receiver class, Mitchell, 4.45 40, 36-inch vert, 10.9 in the broad. His agility drills were top-notch. I mean, it's hard to find better marks than that in this class.
What I liked about him, he makes a lot of – he has a large catch radius. Mm-hmm. Specializes in catching bad. He might be the best bad pass, bad ball catcher in this draft, in my opinion, because he was throwing so many bad passes at Georgia. He could never get the quarterback situation there right. I don't think during his time there. A smart guy. I think he lined up mostly on the outside, but I think he played all over the, you know, all over the place in that offense there. A willing blocker. You'd like to see him finish a little bit more, I think, but you'd want to talk about mid-round wide receiver prospects with probably the best chance of becoming the next one of the league's top wide receivers that catch 80-90 balls a year. I think Malcolm Mitchum is that guy. For sure. And who else did you consider there?
Oh, Farrell Cooper, just because of the visit. But, you know, I wanted to go with a non-visitor, one of them, for the first four rounds, because that's, you know, generally the trend, to kind of go one guy that didn't come in for a visit. And plus, I just think Cooper didn't test that well. I'm a little surprised that they had interest in him. Chris Moore is kind of similar to Mitchell. Then I went with a corner, Ryan Smith, because first, you know, they brought him in for a visit, and he's got that return value.
Anything, anybody else in fourth round we should be saying, hey, maybe this guy?
Oh, I mean, you could go through a ton of names. We're getting to the point where it's almost hard to say where guys are going to end up and who's
right
on the board and available. But, you know, throw in a bunch of receivers, throw in a couple of corners, I think it all makes sense.
Yeah, I do too as well. All right, the Steelers obviously don't have a fifth-round pick as of right now. Boy, you get into this sixth and seventh round, boy, we're just throwing darts here. Mm-hmm. A guy that I think is getting too much – he's in my mock, but I think he's overrated.
It's not a good endorsement.
Yeah, I mean, but it is what it is. The Steelers obviously had interest in him. I'm talking about Jatavis Brown out of Akron, a guy that's a run and hit guy. Best suits as an inside linebacker, I think, in a 3-4 with the Steelers. If you're talking scheme related type things, 345 total tackles at Akron, 41.5 tackles for loss, and 18 sacks during his college career. Comes out like a missile. The thing is this guy isn't what a traditional thumper, obviously. He's a bit undersized. He's gonna have, and I know we make in today's NFL we make a lot of say about, oh man, this guy's underweight as an inside linebacker. That myth's kind of, or that notion starting, or narrative starting to decrease as we go along. I think he can put on a little bit of weight, but make no mistake, this guy is more of a run and chase type of guy. Years away from starting, in my opinion, but he could make this club as a special teams player. Very, very unpolished. I could think of worse players to put here in round six.
Yeah, I think the last thing you wrote on Jatavis Brown was they could do worse than Brown, which, again, is that endorsement is not that strong, but I like the pick. I think he's going to be off the board by then, frankly. But he's a super athlete, and I just wonder if the Steelers want to kind of, you know, look at that hybrid defense in 2017 where they're playing really dime most of the time. Could a guy like Brown fit? I don't think he's going to move to like an actual safety, But I think he could be that hybrid guy the way that we've seen Mark Barron and guys like that have been, Buchanan as well in Arizona. So that'd be interesting. That'd be a fun flyer to take.
I also considered Quentin Jefferson, who the Steelers had local Pittsburgh kid in, you know, in for a visit. DJ White, there's been, you know, cornerback out of Georgia Tech, obvious interest there, along with Texas A&M cornerback Brandon Williams, a very, very intriguing prospect with Williams. If you're going to draft two cornerbacks in this draft, I would have no problems with Brandon Williams being the second one. With that said, those are my four names I threw out. Who do you have in round six, and who else should we consider?
I went with another intriguing corner, DeAndre Elliott from Colorado State. I put on tape of him last night, and though I didn't get the best view of him, you see some quick feet. You see the upper half and the lower half work in sync. He can punch and flip his hips. I think he's a really good athlete, Dave, and all the numbers show that. A 41-inch vert, the shuttle time was fantastic. He does just enough to be a tackler, and I'm going to have the scouting report up tomorrow. But, I mean, he's I think, a slightly better version of what Ross Cockrell was coming out of Duke. And if you look at the numbers, and I'm going to have the table tomorrow to put them side by side, if you compare their measurables and I think watching their play style as well, I mean, they're dead on. As in, athletic guys that are okay against the run, aren't contact shy, but aren't impact tacklers. Twitchier guys, Elliot, I think, a little bit more than Cockrell. Elliot's much longer, though, than Cockrell. Cockrell has actually some really stubby arms, under 30 inches. Elliot's 32 inches. But the 40 times, the vert, all of that is almost dead on.
What were your thoughts on Brandon Williams?
He's intriguing. This is a guy that didn't look lost playing 1 year at corner. He was a running back for his whole life, basically, before he said the last time he played defense before 2015 was when he was 9 years old. So to make that transition in the spring and to play corner, I thought it was impressive. He's got great feet, which you would expect for anyone who's ever played running back. He's physical, which is huge to me, Dave. I mean, running backs, you want to avoid tacklers. This guy wants to go hit you now, so you love that kind of innate ability. But of course, you're talking about a one-year guy, and to make that jump to the NFL, you need a lot of time, you need a lot of reps. You can't be thrown to the fire at all because you're just going to get so lost.
Yeah, and kind of the defensive version of a Braxton Miller, if you will. Mm-hmm. Probably not as talented, obviously, but a guy I think, you know, look, if he can make your club as a special teams player and then give you time to work with him, maybe you get a slot corner out of him.
Yeah, I think he can play on the outside as well. He's got enough size and a little bit of length. But, I mean, any defensive contribution, we're at least 2 years away just because, I mean, he's got to learn about coverages and checks and just everything. And the list is huge for a guy just trying to learn how to play corner, let alone all the other million things to go into the position.
With the Steelers' first seventh-round pick, look, you're running out of names here. I see them drafting an offensive lineman, a tackle with maybe guard possibility somewhere in this draft. I went with Brandon Shell. The Steelers were – Mike Munchak was at the South Carolina pro day. Brandon Shell, let's face it, he's not going to play left tackle regardless in the NFL. He's more of a right tackle type. That probably needs to work on his athleticism and get that weight down a little, which I think he's done during the pre-draft process. Going to be a limited right tackle regardless. A guy that would be interesting to see that wider frame work at a guard spot.
Mm-hmm.
A guy that obviously probably going to wind up on a practice squad, but a guy intriguing. That's why I went that way. Also considered Gerald Hawkins, tackle out of LSU. Kind of same situation as Brandon Shell. Nate Sudfeld, if the Steelers are going to take a late flyer on a quarterback, I can see Indiana quarterback Nate Sudfeld kind of being that guy, and a guy that you know a lot about, and assuming maybe, let's say, they double dip at safety, Mississippi safety Trey Elston. Your thoughts, quick thoughts on those guys and who you had.
Yeah, Shelby, you know, he's big and he's long, and that's the way the Steelers like him. Elston's a guy that's high energy, that fills the run well. I wouldn't agree with Sudfeld, though. I think if they take a quarterback, it's going to be someone with more mobility. I suppose they've shown interest in Prescott and Adams and Kessler. Sudfeld's a big guy, but kind of a statue. So I think if they take a quarterback, it's going to be someone that has some more mobility.
Who'd you have?
Just real quick, I went Blake Martinez. I mean, that's a reach, or in the sense he might not even be there, but he's a thumper. Thought he tested well. You know, he's kind of that replacement for what Terrence Garvin was, so I think he could be a real good special teams. And again, Timmons, Vince Williams, last year of the contract, you want to get some depth at the position to fill you this year and maybe next year as well.
You know what it means when a preacher takes his watch off?
No idea.
It means absolutely nothing because you don't care about the time anymore. So that means you're going to run over. So this podcast is obviously going to run over, but it's only fair that we give our listeners kind of all of our ideas on some of these players. So let's move to the Steelers last, and what we think might be their final pick in the 2016 draft. A guy that I've been intrigued with throughout this whole pre-draft process. Some people have him as going undrafted. I get it, but I don't get it. I'm talking about Joel Heath out of Michigan State. This kid, his measurables alone, you should never scout off measurables alone because you could end up with a guy like, and stats, because you could end up with a seventh-round safety like Gerard Holloman.
Again, not a podcast goes by. Poor Holloman.
Man, this poor kid was moved around all over the Michigan State defensive line. He wasn't allowed to play a lot on third downs, too. Poor kid. If you judge him by his stat, and this is kind of how I ended my thoughts on him. If you're judging him by his stats from the 2015 season, do keep in mind that he only played 46% of the total defensive snaps because he missed a lot of playing time to an ankle injury that also kind of limited his production on the field. Mm-hmm. Not only that, he only played 47 third down snaps in 2015. Yeah, and they used him as a defensive end. Okay, so obviously if you're going to use him as a 4-3 base end, that's not who he is, mm-hmm. in my opinion. This guy is a 3-4 defensive tackle, a 5 tech who can play the 3, the 4, the 5. He is a guy that's going to need some definite development, but a very smart kid. His P-Spark score, Alex, was 115.4. Mm-hmm. And Chris Jones, who several people have going in the first round from Mississippi State, 115.5. So the athleticism is there. Chris Jones is obviously the skill set's more in line right now. Now, Chris Jones, I'll have a rant about him in a minute. But I think you could do worse for a seventh-round draft pick in Joel Heath. I will be floored. I want you to make sure you needle me, too, and say, oh, boy, Dave, you got this one wrong. I will be floored if he goes undrafted. I really, really will be. Other guys I consider here, Daddy Nicholas, if you ask me. Another kid that I think kind of underrated, I think I had in one of my mock drafts, Alondon Roberts out of Houston, inside linebacker, a guy gets shot out of a cannon, it seems like, sometimes moving forward, Houston inside linebacker. And a guy really, Stephon McClure, man, bless his heart, and those knee injuries that he suffered. If this guy hadn't never gotten injured and was able to stay on the field, throughout his whole college career without issues, I think we'd be talking more about Stephon McClure as one of the better safeties in this class. Thoughts on my guys and who do you have?
Yeah, no, I love the Heath pick. I mean, he has the tools. And you remember Nick Williams, who had the tools and might have been a raw guy that, obviously was coming from Samford University and, needed a lot of coaching. But there was excitement with that. And Williams, didn't stick in Pittsburgh. He got plucked by the Chiefs, but he's still hanging around in Kansas City. So seventh round, you want to take a flyer, a guy that has some tools that might not have a lot of experience. And you're right, your ankle injuries are nothing to play around with for any position, let alone a defensive lineman, and I'm sure that probably hindered Heath's ability, in the few snaps that he got as well. And that spark score, I'm not a great, math expert, but you put that up there with Chris Jones, and you got to have my attention. So, I love that idea, and it surprised me in the least to add another body. McClure, like you said, I think, it's too many injuries. And if it hadn't been the injuries, you're at least talking about a draftable guy, kind of a definitely going to get drafted type. Now it's he's kind of really borderline. For me, though, I went with, I had him in my last mock, but I kind of, found some more information to kind of reaffirm that. Matt Sakura from Duke, You know, he's big, and he's long, 35-inch arms. He's a 40-time starter, team captain. He's going to be an interior guy, played center for the Blue Devils. I know that you have Finney and you have Hubbard and guys like that there, but you can always add some competition. The big thing that really made me say that, yes, I want to take this guy is that there's a connection between Sakura and Sean Sarrett. And Sean Sarrett's the offensive assistant, but he mainly works for the offensive line. You see him at training camp. You know, they'll split up the guards and the tackles. Munchak will take one group. Sarrett takes the other group. Sarrett coached Duke from 2008 to 2011, and he probably helped recruit Sakura, who came to campus his freshman year was 2011. That was Sarrett's last year with Duke, so you know this guy. You've recruited this guy. Obviously, Sarrett's not a decision-maker in this process, far from it, but you have some great inside info and some great background information on who this guy is and the type of guy he is in the waiting room and his work ethic and the character and all that. So I think that, you know, connecting those dots and reading those tea leaves, the Seals were at Duke's pro day, probably, you know, to see a little bit of Jeremy Cash, but I don't think Cash worked out at his pro day. He had one after that, so you're seeing other Duke guys, and I bet you Sakura was one of them.
Anybody else you consider in
there? Yeah, I threw some names out there. I think of Brandon Williams, J.P. Holtz as an H-back, kind of a little fun pick there. Maybe an Alex McAllister if he falls to the seventh as a long, lean outside linebacker. Josh just did the report on him, but, you know, seventh-round flyers, you can throw anybody in there.
You think either one of us will hit at least two mock draft picks?
I think collectively we might hit two.
Let me ask you this. Yeah. Of all the names that we talked about, you know, the guys that we considered along with our actual picks, mm-hmm. how many total guys you reckon we have there? 40?
Yeah, about that.
50? Right around in there. Yeah. What's the odds that all seven picks come from the guys that we talked about on this podcast today?
Oh, I don't know. It depends how kind I want to be to us.
Okay, well, what about six of them? Six of the seven?
Yeah, I think 80%, I don't know, 75%. I mean, you know, we've put a lot of work into looking at tendencies and histories and things like that, so it's not just, you know, us shooting from the hip. We're trying to use as much draft information as possible on historical trends. I think that gives us a big leg up in accuracy. So I think it's a pretty good chance. There'll be one surprise in there. There always is, but I think there's a good chance.
Yeah, I'll be disappointed if we come away with this with all the guys that we talk about on this podcast with only four.
Yeah, yeah.
For some reason, all the guys that I like end up being drafted by the Ravens.
Yeah.
Maybe I need to open up Ravens Depot or something like that. Let's end it on this. We have watched a lot of tape on a lot of players. We've read a lot of stuff. It just amazes me how much I didn't know immediately after the season. And it happens year in, year mm-hmm. out, you know, how much I didn't know about players right after the season, Steelers season ended, and how much I know now. I mean, it just amazes me how quick you can take in this knowledge, you know, if you have the time to watch this tape and all like that. With that said, who is the player that you're tired of hearing about that you think's the most overrated player that most likely is going to disappoint and be overdrafted in this year's draft class?
Oh, man, that is a big question to end on. I know the Eli Apple talk has fallen off a lot, and I don't want to harp on him too much, but, you know, I never really bought into it. I know that you were, you know, you were lukewarm on the idea, higher than me, but not super high on him. Man, somebody else that is.
It could be a mid-round guy. Right. It could be, you know, anybody that you're just saying, man, I'm tired of this narrative.
I don't know. I mean, I guess Eli Apple, but I know the narrative isn't that strong. Do you have a good guy that you're really tired of hearing about?
Yeah, Chris Jones.
Yeah. Come on, Dave.
I'm tired of it. I think they're look. You turn on a large selection of his tape. For starters, he's not on the field all the time. And then I researched this down. I don't think he played 70% of the snaps this past year, Alex, for starters. Mm-hmm. If you're going to draft a player in the first or second round, I want him on. I want to know that he was on the field. Okay. So that's the first thing. Where was the production? Look, I know you can't scout guys just by their stats, mm-hmm. but if you're going to be taking an underclassman like this, where was his production?
Yeah, I mean, he's a 1 year starter though.
But where was this start? Where was this production in that 1 year?
Well, the point I'm trying to make is that he's unrefined. That he's a 1 year starter. You know, you're drafting a lot on potential. You know, Eric Armstead for the 49ers went last year, and his production was very minimal as well. So you see guys with a great athletic. You know, it's the Parcells planet theory of big guys that can move.
Right, and I'm not going to deny that that he has some moments on tape that look outstanding. Mm-hmm. Okay, but there are a lot of other times where he's a hot mess,
mm-hmm.
in my opinion,
right.
And he's not. It's going to be up to an NFL coach to get every ounce out of him, and I'm not sure he's willing to give that. I'm really, really not. He has traits. Yes, he has traits. But if you look at his overall, you know, you look at his overall kind of Pat Kerwin likes to use kind of that, you know, that power number, that power
mm-hmm.
index number, where he takes the bench press and he takes the vertical and the broad jump and he adds all those up and you get a power index. I think if you look at Chris Jones, it's like 50. Let's see, 60 something, which is okay. I mean, over 60 is a nice number, but it's not elite,
mm-hmm.
okay? Now, however, when you go and you look at his spark score, as we already talked about, it's near the top, okay? In fact, it is of the guys that the kid that ranks these every year, 22nd overall, which isn't great. Okay, I mean, you got guys like Kendiche and Dean Lowry, who we mentioned earlier in the show, is just a spark
mm-hmm.
wonder boy. You know, it's not in that kind of category. You got Javon Hargrave, even has a better spark score than both these players, and Javon Hargrave even has a much better spark score than Andrew Billings.
Mm-hmm.
So take that for what it's worth. I look, Chris Jones might very well end up being a first round draft pick. He might end up going in the second round. I would be worried. A GM that makes that decision better have some good job security, in my opinion, because I think he's going to get overdrafted, and I think a couple years I'm going to be pointing back and say, remember what I told you about Chris Jones.
Yeah. All right. Let me ask you this one question. You got to give me an answer here. Where you want, but where will Chris Jones end up being drafted? What's the range? What round pick number roughly?
I think around round two is where he'll go.
So like, you know, top 35.
Probably top 40 is where he's going to end up going.
Okay.
And I use that loosely because if he gets picked 20th overall, it looks like I hit the mark. No, I shouldn't say that. I should say that he'll go between 20 and 40. How's that?
That's a range for you. But let me make a bold prediction. I believe that Chris Jones will be a top 20 pick and could go as high as the Saints, which I believe pick at 12.
And you think I'm nuts. You have to.
A little bit, but more than normal.
More than normal. But I mean, can you look? I remember first time I turned on this tape on this kid. I remember mm-hmm. what the tweets that I sent you, and I forget who else, Josh or Luke or whoever. I just didn't see it. And I think it's important for people to take hard stands on these on players. I really do. I think you just mm-hmm. see too many of these guys out there that toe the line with players mm-hmm. and don't have hard opinions. I'm not afraid, and I won't be afraid to admit I'm wrong on Chris Jones, but that's the guy that I think is the most overrated, that I'm tired of hearing about, that I think is going to be overdrafted, and we'll have to see where his NFL career goes
mm-hmm.
you know, from here. You know, the most underrated guy, Alex, that you say, man, just why aren't people talking about this guy more, that this guy has the potential to be great in the NFL?
Man, I think there's a lot of safeties that are really impressive. I think the safety class is better than people give it credit for. I could give you a lot of names at safety, but I think Kevin Byard from Middle Tennessee State, who kind of got lost in the shuffle because he wasn't a combine invite. He was one of the biggest snubs of the NFL Combine, Dave. But I think Byard, there's very few flaws in his game. I was able to get some more tape on him and write up the full report. He's a great character guy as well. And he had a great game against Alabama. And if you play well against Alabama, you can play well in the NFL.
I'm right there with you with him. He wasn't the first guy that came to my mind. Mm-hmm. But I really think that that's a great choice. It's going to be interesting where he winds up and watching his NFL career, you know, move forward. I think Malcolm Mitchell. I think this is a guy that's kind of been swept under the rug. Have you heard a lot of people talking about Malcolm Mitchell?
A little bit more, but not a ton. I think because of the injuries, you know, you lose guys because of injuries and, you know, with some of the top receivers that you have in this class, you don't think about some of the mid-round guys. That's a good pick.
Anybody else in there underrated?
Oh, I my brain is so fried, you know, doing all this work, getting ready for the draft. I'm sure I could come up with a couple other names. You know, there's a lot of guys that I like, a lot of guys that interest me. A lot of the guys that we've profiled lately, I think, are very interesting picks. But I have my brains running on empty right now.
I think Jordan Jenkins, yeah. Another Georgia guy. I don't know what it is about those two players, about Malcolm Mitchell and Jordan Jenkins, but man, I just think I really like their film. I think Hunter Henry hasn't got enough talk. Mm-hmm. It seems like people just have swept him under the rug. He's the best of a bad class of tight ends, and that is true. But, I mean, I think there's a little bit more depth to him. Mm. I think Nick Vinette, not enough's been written about him. Now, obviously, he didn't get a lot of pass-catching opportunities at Ohio State, but I think he's a great blocker. Mm. I think he'll fit in good as possibly a starting tight end somewhere in the NFL.
And I like your Braxton. I think if it's one pick that you might have, like, perfectly, that's not Carl Joseph in the first round, I think it's your Braxton Miller pick at 89. I mean, this guy's a really hard worker, and there's no substitute for hard work, and he's a smart guy, and that's what Kevin Colbert said, right? Hearts and smarts.
Right, absolutely. And look, I don't want to put him on who was your boy last year?
Lockett.
Lockett. I'm not going to put, I mean, nowhere close to that.
Yeah.
But, I think he, after the Senior Bowl, people tried to just shoot down the like. It seemed like everybody and their brother tried to blow everybody out of the water who liked Miller out of the water.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, that seemed to be kind of the common narrative is, oh, you guys are just bandwagon. Let's shoot it down so we're done with it now during the pre-draft process.
Miller had a good week down there, though. Miller, I think people were impressed by Braxton Miller. I was.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Coming out of that, though, people said people wanted to take the contrarian with him.
Oh, okay. I see. I got you. Yeah.
That's just my opinion. Mm-hmm. On I think there is more there, though. Now, if you want to talk about the guy possibly the next Tyler Lockett, I think Sterling Shepard.
Yeah.
Remember that name. I really, really like that kid.
And you're right. He's a great. I mean, he was down there at the Senior Bowl. We got to talk to him. He was for the press conference. Very well-spoken kid and great guy.
And, I think obviously in my mock draft, another guy that's just didn't get enough talk is Joel Heath. And you can bet your bottom dollar I'll be watching what winds up happening with him. Alex, boy, we covered a lot in this special edition. We apologize for running over. I'm sure you will forgive us on this. David and I, and who knows, if David can't make it for some reason, he's going to be out of town. I know if there's logistics, Alex will perhaps join me. We're going to wrap up all these draft picks probably every day with some sort of mini podcast in some sort. So we hope you enjoyed our pre-draft coverage. Alex, you and the guys have done a fantastic job. I certainly do appreciate it. Make sure you hit these draft contests as well too, and we'll be talking to you probably sometime on Friday. You can follow me on Twitter at Cedars Depot. Follow Alex on Twitter at Alex_Kazora. Follow my co-host, David Todd, at David M. Todd. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. If you want to donate to all this great work that's being done, you can do so going to SteelersDepot.com, finding the donate button in the navigational bar. And as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.